From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk Britishisms and how much we Americans enjoy talking like our friends from across the pond, or like to think that's what we're doing. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do, of course, every week, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Kathy Petras from your home in Armia, Spain. How are you doing today, Kathy?
I'm just dandy, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk to you guys about Britishisms today. Ross Petras from your home in Toronto in Ontario. Ross, how are you doing? How is your back healing?
It's my musculuses are much better. I'm feeling very good today.
Very good. So we are talking today about Britishisms, about how much Americans seem to love British English. However, there were a couple of things that you guys wanted to start out with before we got to the quiz today.
Well, one thing we keep hearing, and we were discussing this a little bit on just before the show, we keep hearing good on you instead of the old-fashioned good for you. Do you have any idea why we're hearing this, or are you hearing this in your neck of the woods, Fletcher, or your neck of the plains in your case?
Yeah, we don't
have good on you.
We don't have a lot of trees here. Like something is good on you instead of good for you?
Good on you.
No. It's like I see it printed all the time. You see it like on social media. Someone goes like, you know, I just made $1 million. And someone's like, good on you.
Good on you.
Oh, good on you. Yeah. I wouldn't say that I'm hearing that any more than I ever have, which isn't to say that I've heard it a lot, but, you know, every now and then here and there.
Well, there goes our premise here. Thank you, Fletcher. I see it all the time, okay? I see it constantly for some reason. I do. Like a Facebook. I'm actually doing nothing anymore online, much am I? But I keep seeing good on you. People are going like, good on you. Like, I just donated all this money to the ASPCA. Good on you. And it used to be you'd say, good for you.
Yeah.
Or I still say good for you. I don't say good on you. Do you, Ross?
I don't at all. No. I say good for you.
Here's something I just thought of, though. If you're seeing it online a lot, maybe people started saying good on you. I mean, it probably is just trendy. But also, if you write good for you, it could be taken kind of sarcastically.
It has a snarky tone to it. I think you're right.
I mean, not necessarily.
But not necessarily, but it could be very snarky.
Right. It could be taken
that way. I think you're, and good on you doesn't sound snarky. Yet.
Yeah,
I'm sure it will eventually, but, you know.
Well, it just drives me crazy. I'm sorry. This is one where it's like a Kathy pet peeve. Because it's like, good on you. I always think Australian. We learned also that it's also common in Ireland.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. Ireland is what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Aussie for some reason. But whatever. I mean, which it is. But it's like, I think to me, it just sounds fake. People going, good on you. It's like, you never said that before with this, you know, what the heck are you doing? I don't know.
Yeah, but language is changing. People have a right to say what they want to say.
Thank you. But it makes me cranky. It just does. I don't know why, but it just grates on my nerves.
I don't, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. It just seems like that's a way, you know, people are seeing things. Good on ya. I don't know. Why not?
But you're also saying it in a fake Australian accent, Ross. That's
a
worse.
Terrible accent. Again, I get this.
You know what else is we have a lot of access, a lot more access now to television shows from different countries, especially like Australia or Ireland or the UK. And, you know, Netflix is just pumping these things out. People have BritBox. There's all sorts of...
Yeah.
And so people are picking up phrases like that a lot more because they're watching a lot more television.
Yeah,
I think that's true.
I think you're right.
Although you've also seen that the use of, closed captions is skyrocketed. And I think part of the reason is I do have sometimes troubles even with American, shows. I mean, and we have them on, not all the time, but some British and Australian shows, I got to admit, yeah.
You can also get me off on a rant there about the sound mixing that's being done these days. It's... I'm with you on that. Horrific.
I'm definitely with you on that.
Good on you, Fletcher, for bringing that up.
Thank you.
The other one that we noticed a lot is whilst.
Oh.
Have you noticed that instead of while? Have you noticed that, Fletcher, or not?
Not too much. It's not completely foreign to me. I guess I see it now and then when people are just doing their internet talking, but but I wouldn't say I see it a lot. No, I don't think so.
I see it a fair amount.
I've seen it too. I'm just looking at Google Ngram right now. I'm just curious about whilst versus while, because I've noticed this one.
See, I think, again, I think it's Americans trying to sound posh, if you will. I do.
Yeah.
I like, though, there was a definition by the Department of Linguistics at the University of Leeds. In modern British English, whilst is supposedly a more formal variant of while. It is also, in my experience, particularly beloved of students who write bad essays.
Very
That's
good.
Perfect.
Do you know why the ST is there, interestingly enough?
Not at all.
Apparently it began, they think, in Middle and Old, probably Middle English, with the superlative as an ST, as in, you know, the greatest or whatever. The ST got tagged on. And another interesting word that relates to that is against, because it used to be again. And then the ST, because whilst sounds sort of weird to us, but against or amidst both don't sound that weird.
No, that's
But they both have that same origin. Isn't that interesting?
Speaking of words, you guys had a new word that you wanted to talk about.
Okay, it's a neologism I had never heard of, and it popped up in one of my emails. I get, you know, a wide range. And it's a neologism called incidental 70. It's the word, it's a compound word. You've got incidental as the prefix and 70 as the number. And it was coined by linguists to describe a phenomenon they've noticed. It's a tendency of English speakers to use the word 70 as a placeholder or an approximation if they don't know what the number really is.
Basically, as Kathy talked for, gosh, 70 seconds, it's basically, I must have seen 70 people at the mall today. I got 70 emails in my inbox. They just throw in 70. What interested both Kathy and me, though, is our mother had her own incidental 70. Remember, Kath?
752.
Yep.
Wow.
Everything was 752. Yeah, everything was 752. She would say, I saw 752 people at the mall. I owe $752 to them for overdue fines. Everything was 752.
Yeah. I just love the fact, A, I didn't know that there was such a term as incidental 70. And B, I love the fact that 70 seems to be the number. I mean, I wonder the genesis of that. Why is 70 more euphonious somehow or what? I want to find out more about this. I mean, I have nothing to say other than that. I just was fascinated. I just want to say two very quick things before we move on to the guts of this British and American English thing. First of all, apparently Gen Z, there was an article in The Guardian saying that Americans, younger Americans, are adopting fake British accents.
Boy, yeah.
I just love that. And they think that part of the reason is because of Peppa Pig.
I was about to say that.
It's really cool.
Because they say, like, kids are saying mummy and tomato instead because, oh, Peppa. I just love that.
That really got me. When my son used to watch Shining Time Station, which was Thomas the Tank Engine, which was British at the time. And he kept talking about treacle all the time.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what treacle is?
Well, I remember reading it all the time. Isn't it syrup? Isn't it like maple syrupy sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's uncrystallized syrup made from the refining of sugar. But apparently the Brits have a lot of treacle. And I was like, what is this stuff anyway?
Yeah, because I remember as a kid, treacle would feature in certain British books I read. And you're a kid. You just go, whatever. You know, kind of.
You just go,
treacle.
Whatever. You just accept it. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And my final mini fact, and then we'll get on to it, is that I was saying how, you know, younger people with the British accents, but apparently David Beckham, speaking of British, more British people are speaking like Americans, they're saying, and Brits are getting very upset and up in arms. And apparently David Beckham at the 2024 BAFTAs referred to football as soccer.
Yeah, there was a huge uproar.
Well, you know, it was called soccer even in the UK till what, like the 1970s or something. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It was football and soccer. I remember hearing that it started out as like abbreviations for different associations. Like soccer was association football, a sock, soccer. Mm. Oh, and the other one I think was rugby football or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, rugger and a soccer.
Yeah, rugger and soccer. That's what it was. Rugger and soccer. Yeah.
And soccer was sometimes spelled like with S-O-C-K-E-R too, which is really weird, but whatever. Well, moving right along, Fletcher, we're going to start doing some Britishisms. Let's pop over to the main part of the quiz here. And the first word is pop in. Now, is this a Britishism or an Americanism?
Like I'm going to pop into the grocery store?
Yeah. And now this is what got us. We read online. It was someone wrote in saying, I've been at this too long. That, anyway, was my reaction when I read the following in yesterday's New York Times Magazine profile of Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. He uses Britishisms that make him sound a little like the old famous faux Brits Gwyneth Paltrow or Madonna. He told me he had a good old time. Living in Marybone is nice, he said, because we have loads of friends and people pop by. Now, this writer is criticizing Jimmy Wales' use of pop by because he claims it's a Britishism. Fletcher, your question for 10 points, is this a Britishism or not?
Huh. I don't think I've ever thought about whether that's a Britishism or not. We had some people pop in. I just popped in to say hello. It feels like it is a Britishism. It also feels like, I don't think it is. I think it's probably American.
Well done. Good on you, Fletcher.
Yeah, thanks.
It is not.
Yeah. Why do we think it's British? That's interesting.
Well, there are two questions here. Kathy and I both, this is hard to really, we had some difficulty really doing the etymology of this. We both have used and have heard pop over, pop in, pop by for years. Mm-hmm. And then we looked online and a number of people are saying it's very common in the Midwest, etc. One interesting aspect of this, though, is, and this is slightly convincing, English seems to have more pop uses than the U.S., and that's a claim that we're not sure about.
Yeah, because you pop across town, they say in British English, and I would never say I'm popping across town.
But I wouldn't, they said here, this linguistics article said they would say nip, but I would say I'm not nipping across town either.
Well, that's what they're saying. They're saying that the British say pop across and nip across. I'm sorry.
I would never say nip across.
I'm going to start using nip across. I like it.
I would never say.
No, I've never said it in my life. I think this is the first time I've ever said it. But pop by or pop in are more American. But Brits seem to use more pops in general. Like they say, pop behind something, pop onto something.
Yeah, that when you said those two, that would sound odd to me.
Yeah.
You know, pop onto the table, pop onto the, you know, I don't know.
What are you doing on that table, Ross?
I know, exactly.
How funny. So the Brits tend to use pop in phrases more often, but in this case, pop in or pop by is actually more American. We just maybe think it's more British because they use pop more often.
Well, we're going to be talking a little bit about what we think is English and what we don't think is English. Exactly.
Now, this is about an umbrella.
Okay.
This is from the New York Times.
Okay. The sentence is, Mr. Chamberlain's Bumbershoot provides inspiration for British and American cartoonists.
So we have two questions for you, Fletcher. What is a Bumbershoot? And what is the origin of Bumbershoot?
Well, I think Kathy just spoiled the Bumbershoot question. You said it was an umbrella?
Yes.
Did I? Oh. Oops.
And what's the origin of Bumbershoot? Honestly, it sounds like the name of a Charles Dickens character.
I'm going to give you another. This is from Frasier, the sitcom Frasier. You remember that,
don't
you? Oh,
sure. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. And we have the English character Daphne. Okay. Mm-hmm. And remember Niles had the hots for Daphne. And Niles goes, take my Bumbershoot. Daphne goes, oh, isn't that nice? Well, at least someone appreciates my mother tongue.
The question is, do you think Bumbershoot is American or British?
Look, I know how your quizzes sometimes go, but if I just heard that, I would completely assume it was British, not American.
And you would be very wrong.
Yeah.
But you knew that, didn't you?
Well, but not really. I mean, I knew that because you asked me, but I would have otherwise just assumed that it was British. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I always thought so, frankly. Ross and I talked about it because It's not. And I always assumed it was British, but it actually began in the 1870s. Specifically, the OED found it in the Chester, Pennsylvania Times in 1876.
It comes from a hybrid of a mashup of umbrella and parachute. And it was as a joke. This is from 1876, the Chester, Pennsylvania Times. The fall was immense, and he put his bumper chute down to catch himself. But it has like a tone of like fun and joking, mm-hmm. But it became, I think, because the Times put that bumper chute that you saw, they put it in quotations. It sounds like it when you see that, it gives it the authority. Ah, that's a British
well, that's
term.
What I was just gonna say. Ben Yagoda in the Wall Street Journal said it went back as far as it was in 1939 with the whole thing about Chamberlain. And having it, they thought that he had said it, and then it became the big thing during World War II. You would just do descriptions of British people with their bumper chutes.
But I think Fletcher really had the right answer when he said it sounded Dickensian. And I think to American ears, it does have a Dickensian, British-y tenor or tone to it. And I think that's completely correct. Which leads us to the next word, poppycock.
Ah, yes, poppycock. That's a good word, poppycock. That's nonsense, right? More or less is what poppycock is.
Mm-hmm.
So is poppycock British or is it American?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Again, seems like something that you would say was British. That one feels even more American, actually, to me than Bumbershoot does. I want to say
you're
that.
Right.
Yeah, is it? It is American.
It's originally U.S. It's colloquial, obviously. OED has it beginning in the 1850s. It's poppycock. Definitely not a Britishism.
I think we forget that there were a lot of words like in the mid-19th century floating around like that in the U.S., you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Poppycock is interesting because it comes from the Dutch, actually.
Oh.
Dutch dialect. Because it means papa is soft food, like baby food. And cock means, you know, crap or dung.
Caca.
So yeah, caca.
Huh. Wow.
So it's baby poop, doll's poop.
So was it, did people just sort of take, I mean, Dutch immigrants were saying things and it sort of just morphed into poppycock?
Yeah.
Wow.
Poppycock and then poppycock.
Yeah.
The funny thing with that though is, I mean, it actually, that one I would have thought was English. And I picture, I'm going to do a terrible accent again. I picture someone going, oh, poppycock, like that,
right.
And it being English.
Right.
And I picture like an upper class accent for it. I mean, it's completely wrong, but it's...
Well, that's what they say. I had read somewhere that the assumption is that people think it sounds like an upper class Brit because of the O's, the poppy, mm-hmm. cock.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Like you just said, Ross, it's not pappy cack. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. How I wish it were. Pappy cack.
Well, the next word is dodgy.
Dodgy.
As in,
oh, yeah.
That seems a little dodgy. I hear that all the time now.
I do, too. It's funny that you bring that up. I have a friend who, I think he listens to the show. He, once in college, he spent a year, I think, in Australia going to university there. And
Ooh.
He came back and was saying things were dodgy. That was the first time I remembered ever hearing it. And this was... you know, 25 years ago or so now. And so because of that, I would have expected that it was, I mean, I guess British, Australian, really, because that was when I first heard it, was when he came back from there. But I wouldn't have expected it was American just because I'd never heard it before he came back saying that.
You're right.
So it's British?
It's British. It's a British one, meaning evasive, artful, and cunning, and then now more unreliable, potentially dangerous. And I'm hearing it all the time now.
I am too.
You too. I hear constantly
all the
now,
time.
Oh, that looks dodgy.
Actually, I'm curious, Fletcher, because one of our linguistic sites also said, and I haven't heard this, Australian and New Zealand dodgy can also be something shonky. Have you ever heard shonky?
Shonky?
Yeah.
No, that one's new to me.
Ross, we have our Australian pals are coming over tonight. I'm going to ask.
Shonky.
Actually,
ask
and I'll report back.
Actually, Kathy, why don't you instead go, oh, that seems rather shonky, and see what they do.
they're going to think I'm insane. Or think more insane.
Right, yes.
Oh, one of the interesting thing, I just looked on Google Ngram. Dodgy basically was barely used, at least on Google Ngram, until the 80s. And then between 1980 and 2010, usage literally went up 10 times.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It just is, it's basically a straight line up. So it went from nothing to you know, 60 miles and 100 miles an hour or something.
Okay, I would venture to guess, and Russell, I want you to plug it in. Well, it's hard to do. The next word is ginger, G-I-N-G-E-R, ginger.
Mm-hmm. Ginger to refer to a redheaded person?
Precisely.
Speaking of which, Kathy, that shot up like five times in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
I believe you're asking. That's Harry Potter. That's Harry Potter. That's Ron Weasley. It really is, I think.
Yeah, you know, I seem to remember a South Park episode where they were hating on gingers also. And so that might have had something to do with it. That, especially because of the Harry Potter thing, has always seemed very British to me.
The interesting thing for me was the OED has the definition of ginger. Having the color of ginger. And then they have of a person sandy haired, which I don't think it is, of a cock having red plumage, which I do think of it is. Mm-hmm. And then they have later definitions of a pale red color, which particularly applied to hair. But their first definition of sandy hair, I wonder if it originally, and then they have another definition from 1886, ginger is sandy haired. Which I don't think of as all. I think of ginger completely as red.
Yeah, red and pale.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me, though, because, again, we go back to the Americans, like, picking up Britishisms, because I don't think I ever heard any... Everybody talks about redheads, and then suddenly
redhead.
It was like, oh, he's a ginger, too. Ginger more is a noun.
Yeah.
He's a ginger. Prince Harry is a ginger.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
Completely.
Yeah, no, and that's odd to me because it's suddenly huge. It's like you don't hear anyone, like one of our cats, Pon, is an orange cat. Marmalade, I used to call those cats. Now you say he's a ginger, you know?
Okay, so we're going to go on to wonky. What does wonky mean? I'm sure you know. Where did it come from?
Wonky, yeah, something's wonky. Well, actually, this is funny because wonky kind of means two different things. One is that it's sort of... maybe hastily put together and it doesn't quite work right. Wonky can also be somebody who's really, really into something, like say the data behind something, right?
Yep. You answered both of our questions before we even asked them. So.
Okay. Well, I bring that up because sometimes I have to do just a little bit of work to figure out what somebody means in a sentence on the internet.
You're completely correct.
Yeah, especially when it's like a political statement by somebody, because I don't know if they're talking about a policy wonk or if they're talking about something that's kind of janky and doesn't work right. Mm-hmm. You know?
Janky's another interesting word, actually, that you just said.
Well, the first definition of wonk that you were talking about is like, you know, unstable or shaky. They think may come from a dialectical word in Old English, wonkle, which means shaky or tottery. And then from there, and apparently in early West Germanic, wankel also meant shaky, unstable. Uh-huh. So they think, I mean, it's basically an old English word, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea it had been around that long.
Yeah, I thought it was really new. But there's also the other wonk, though, is really interesting, too.
The one where you say someone's a wonk or they're very wonky, isn't like studying a ton or really into something. They originated in the 50s, and it's very American. It's not the British wonky. Mm. It's the American wonky is that one. It sort of branched off. But the interesting thing is they think it came from wonky as in shaky or reliable, or I don't know if you can use this one, or a variant on wanker, which we don't want to go really into.
Huh.
It became huge in the late 80s, and then it became really big during Bill Clinton. Because they talked about the whole wonks, the policy wonks.
Policy wonk.
Right. Yeah. Fascinating.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
This one is we've heard all the time now. Brilliant as in amazing or good.
Right. That's,
what do you, that obviously, you guess the origin of that. I mean, I don't think it takes much guessing.
Yeah. Brilliant in that sense. I mean, I would have definitely assumed that it was British.
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, the way I even said it a little bit ago, brilliant. There was a Guinness commercial that became really popular a while back with some animated characters who that's all they would say really about Guinness is how, mm-hmm. how it was brilliant. And I think it really took off after that.
Yeah, that's one that actually I say now, too, I think.
I don't. I don't say brilliant, actually. It's interesting.
I do. But then I think it's because we're in the expat community, so it's like tons of Brits, you know, in the, I mean, fewer Americans than there are Brits and Aussies, so.
Well, there are mounds of English here. They all say it. I just don't for some reason.
Yeah.
Do you, Fletcher, do you know the origin of this word?
The origin of the word, like in this sense, or I mean, I assume it comes from, you know, it. No, I don't. I mean, I don't know the origin of the word brilliant.
Well, it's interesting because it comes from the mineral beryl.
Oh,
Shine like a beryl.
Oh, wow.
Beryllus is a.
I like that. I actually like that one. Yeah,
that's really neat.
So it shines like a diamond type thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I found some articles when I was just looking up brilliant, saying that now in England, more people are saying ace instead of brilliant. Like that's
I saw
ace.
That too. I saw that
I
too. I'm curious
like
about that.
I kind of like ace. It sounds sort of cool, no? Hmm.
You know, that makes me think of American slang, at least from a number of decades ago, where something was aces.
Yeah, that's aces.
Oh, I'm sorry. Complete aside, I looked up janky. I got curious because I just love that.
Uh-huh.
To me, it's so evocative. Definitely American. Chiefly African-American, they're saying, is what they found it from. And it doesn't, the OED now, we can't necessarily, you know, it's probably before that. The OED has its first thing in print in 1989. Hmm. So it's that recent, which I suspect it's not. But I suspect that that's the first time the OED, you know, did something about it.
Yeah, it's probably been around longer than that.
No, everything's saying 1990s.
Yeah, you definitely hear it way more now.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to end, or should we say we can begin, too, with cheers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cheers. That's funny. So speaking of Australians, as I was earlier, that same friend I have who went to school in Australia for a year, every now and then he would have a friend call up. We roomed together after he came back from Australia. And so every now and then an Australian friend of his would call up and would end a conversation with cheers. And I always thought, oh, that's cute. I never hear that at all. So in that sense, I want to say it's probably British, like cheers, not necessarily cheers as a when you're having drinks, but cheers just like as a greeting or as a goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Salutation. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's interesting. The saying goodbye with cheers was originally Australian.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So that would fit. What you're saying now, it's mainly British, but it started out in Australia. The cheers, mm-hmm. see ya. I use it all the time.
I love it. I think it's a really good one. It also, it's sort of neutral too. It's like nice. You're saying, hey, be happy in a way. And it ends on a nice note, I think. We can all say it together. Cheers.
Cheers, mates.
Cheers until next time.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.